Oh, yeah. Hashtag parent life. It's time to get into it, folks. We, my wife, who's joining us on the phone right now, Sherry Fontana. Say hi, Sherry.
Hi.
So, honey, you said... Yeah, you're here. And just a little disclaimer, you may hear screaming kids in the background or not if she does a good job of... Where are you hiding right now?
So, I'm upstairs, but and they're downstairs.
So, how...
But I may have to go and peek in on them.
Okay, do we have a minute, you think? About 10 minutes or so?
A minute to 10? I can't... I have no idea. We'll just play it by ear and see how it goes.
All right, I'm going to quickly kind of give you the gist of this article. So, the other day, she sent me an article from Time Magazine, How to Raise a Sweet Son in an Era of Angry Men. And basically, the article is, you know, trying to find the balance between letting our sons be who they are, whether they be emotional, whether they're easy criers, whether they're, I don't, you know, whatever it is, their personality, and balancing that with, you know, today's, you know, like, you know, be tough like daddy attitude. And, you know, like I said earlier on the show, I come from an era where my dad was pretty, you know, strict and old Sicilian guy and had his ways and wanted you to be tough. And if you cut yourself, get up, keep going. So that was all I know as I grew out and went out in the world and, you know, learned my own emotions and all that stuff. I, you know, become more in tune with who I am, but still struggle. I'll be real about it. I still struggle when I feel like my son shouldn't be crying about that. And then, you know, me and my wife get into it because we're, you know, talking about whether it's right or wrong. And we literally just now had a situation where he cut his knee and he was very emotional. And, you know, she calls me. She's like, kind of, what should I do? And I referenced this article. So, sweetheart, chime in here.
So this is a topic for me that really just like hits home and it's so important to me. And so I try to go off of kind of my gut and then obviously like some research and then find a balance. But I think it's so important to honestly let kids be who they are. Even if Luca falls, cuts his knee and it's a tiny scratch, he's screaming and crying and is afraid. Like, I feel like teaching them to cope with those emotions is the more important part as opposed to trying to make them to trust those feelings and not feel like that and not, and, you know, be tough, shake it off, get up. I think it's teaching boys to suppress those feelings. And I think that they may be tough kids, but doesn't mean they'll have meaningful relationships when they're older and be able to deal with their emotions properly.
Yeah, I mean, quoting this article, sweet boys grow up to be men who recognize the strength in being vulnerable and empathetic. Men who aren't threatened by criticism or perceived competition from whom they deem other, be it skin color, sexual orientation, or religion, education, whatever. Sweet boys are children who've been given by their parents a wider field of permission to feel anything, everything, and to express those emotions without shame. For those listening out there, how does that make you feel? I'd love to hear this because I know it's a topic of debate. You know, your dad, Cher, is a tough old school guy, too, who would totally disagree that you got to toughen the kid up. You got to, you know, prepare him for the world. Love to hear you guys. Whether you're on Facebook, you can go to my Facebook account, Frank Fontana, and chime in there. You can write some text messages. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. We do have some calls coming in. But so, all right, how did you navigate the scraped knee situation with him screaming so the whole neighborhood could hear it?
I mean, okay, so definitely, to be honest, there was a few moments in that 10-minute span. Well, I was like, okay, everyone's hearing him scream. It's a cut knee. What if people come over and they're like, something, you know, bad is happening? But then I just took a few deep breaths every time, and I feel like it diminishes his feelings. If he's really in pain or if he's afraid or if he's freaked out, I think there's a certain amount of responsibility as a mom to comfort him and, again, teach him to cope with those feelings as opposed to teaching him to not feel that way and don't be scared, you know, get up, it doesn't hurt, shake it off. Like, I feel like that is not teaching him the right way. It's not teaching him how to deal with his emotions.
So I can hear a million Chicagoans right now going, oh, that's going to soften him up. He's not going to be a tough kid. You know, how's he going to deal with...
Half my friends, you know, half my family members, I have a sister-in-law who is super strong and she has super tough little boys. And she's the type that would say, get up, you scraped your knee, are you kidding me? And I will tell you, they do get up and they're fine. So that's why I struggle with it. I think, okay, am I not teaching him the right way? Like, you always question what you're doing. But I just feel like if he is that kid, Luca, who is, you know, afraid of falling or whatever it may be, I think there's a balance in dealing with his emotion and teaching him to kind of to cope with it.
Hey, let's add Gene to the conversation. Gene, thanks for calling. What say you about this topic?
Well, I think you have to look at the long term. I think a lot of parents, there's always a soft touch, and then there's the one that tries to, you know, hold a line of some sort. And that was I think opposites do attract in marriages a lot. And what worked with my two sons was, one, we had to take to a special shoe fitter to know when he had outgrown his shoes, because he didn't care if his toes were coming out the front. And the other one, if he discovered a scratch at bath time, it was a crisis.
Yeah,
and
that's our son.
You know, you just have to treat each child as an individual. And I always showed empathy. My husband tried to, you know, stiff upper lip kind of thing, but he was not real forceful about it. And I was kind of in charge. And we ended up raising two of the most compassionate, kind people you could ever imagine. They're both vegetarians. Everything matters to them, the environment, yeah. You know, everything. And they are wonderful people. And if people don't think it's as important to teach empathy and compassion, just wait till you're elderly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It comes full circle, right?
Yes, it does. My husband died a couple of years ago, and the youngest son lives here in the city. He runs his own business, employs about 20 people. It couldn't
Good
be easier. He would come out and sit and read poetry and relate vacations that they had taken together. My husband was only, you know, half conscious.
Yeah.
And play his special songs, Lonesome Dove. I mean, whatever it was.
It's so sweet.
And he sat there for days on end when he could get away. And the other one came in from Tucson and, you know, did a lot of the same thing. So
that's beautiful, Jean. I really.
You need to think about the long term in life.
Sure.
Okay,
definitely.
Thank you,
Jean. I appreciate your 2 cents. So I think what Jean's saying here is a little bit of balance, maybe, but definitely playing to the side of the empathy and compassion, which I do believe we do share. I think at the end of the day, as frustrated as we get, we totally do.
I mean, what if kids are just kids and their personalities are personality and we're doing all this work and they're going to turn out how they turn out no matter what?
That's pretty much what it sounds like and what everyone says. But, you know, I guess, you know, that's why it's hashtag parent life. The struggles will continue.
It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for joining us. If you're tuning in on Facebook, if you're at my Facebook account at Frank Fontana, you can go to Frank Fontana Creative on my Facebook fan page, and you'll notice I have this white film of cream on my head. It's because Dr. Stephen Sherwood was just in studio during the news break, prepping me for the first ever live Botox injection on WGN Radio in the history of the station, from what I've heard. Dave, can you confirm with Brad if this has ever been done before? Not that Brad knows. I can't hear you, Dave. You got to hit the button there. There you go. All right. Well, anyway, before we get this going here, let's talk about beauty in a different sense. Beauty in your home, beauty in your backyard. Joining me is David Berryhill, the owner of Architect Chicagoland. He's the president. David, thanks for coming back on the show. We appreciate you always being here, my friend.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, man. It's always a good time when you're here. This is the season. Tis the season for you.
Absolutely. The phones are ringing. The emails are coming in.
I was just going to say, you got to be booking up quickly now.
Yeah, we are. It's getting crazy. It's exciting. We got a home show this weekend, and we've had.
Where are you at this weekend?
Tinley Park.
So this is important. If you're around the Tinley Park area or Chicagoland area, one thing is to hear David and maybe go to his website, but go to the event because you can actually. Are you going to be there personally? At a certain period of time?
Don't make it today. Yeah.
Okay. So you guys have a booth?
We do.
Okay. Yeah. So you can get to see the booth. You could taste it. You could feel it. I always feel like when you're investing, it's always nice to meet the people that you're, because it's an investment. You know, what we're talking about is not just a couple $1,000s. It's usually a bigger project, right?
Absolutely. And you could go to the show today and meet Sarah or Lisa. They take great care of you and give you some wonderful ideas.
Excellent. And there's this article that just came out in USA Today about outdoor living spaces being one of the biggest trends for 2018. Probably why your phone's ringing. Like when articles like this come out, do you see an uptick in business?
Yeah, often. And we've been seeing this pattern for over a year now, that just people are really excited. They want to get outside. They want to make their house more enjoyable,
yeah,
and create a space for their family to hang out in the backyard.
Well, especially in Chicago, you know, we're in the surrounding areas of Illinois, with our climate being so crappy for 6 months, and then we get to enjoy it for four or five, maybe five if we're lucky. You want to have a space that really you can like embrace and your family can enjoy. And there's a couple things that are trending right now, and I'm curious to see if you're doing this in your business. Fire pits and built-in grills.
Yeah, fire pits, no pun intended, are super hot.
Yeah.
And we, we do it both ways, where we'll build them just for wood burning, very traditional, simple. And more, though, we're doing gas fire pits with, like, reflective glass and ceramic logs, just really cool stuff.
So, like, the crystals and cool. Yeah. You know, when somebody comes to you with a different style home, because that works for, I would say, contemporary home mostly, but if you have a traditional, let's say, old Victorian, what kind of fire pits are you suggesting to people?
It really does vary, and that's a great point. We always try to match the look of the house.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people say they don't care, and then we'll do what they want.
Sure.
But our suggestion is to try to match. The ceramic logs give you a more traditional look if you want a gas fire pit.
How about the surround, though? Are you trying to match, I guess, you know, if, say, are the fire pits you're doing built into a patio? They're not necessarily one-off.
Yeah, usually they're integrated into a patio. We do it a couple different ways. Sometimes it'll be in the center of a circle, which is kind of the look most people expect.
Sure.
But often we'll design it at the edge so that space is a little more functional and useful.
Yeah.
You know, it's more about the stone you use. A lot of times we're using paver products. We work with Belgard mainly, and we'll use their materials. And they have some that are more traditional-looking distressed products versus a more contemporary look that's very rectangular, clean lines. And you can adjust that based on the home and what matches best.
Do you lean towards a product that's man-made when it comes to the pavers that has a little more durability versus natural stone?
Well, I love them both. Bluestone's beautiful. Flagstone patios can be great. People just have to understand it's more maintenance, more work.
Sure,
And so from a standpoint of most people want less maintenance today, I love the man-made products. They're really more durable than they ever used to be, and they look more natural than they used to
be. I agree with you. We're ready to get some calls. And folks, if you want some free design advice, literally free design advice right here from two of the best in the business, I'll give you some from the interior and then just give you my 2 cents on the exterior, but a guy who knows it better than anybody on the outside, David Berryhill, is here. So let's take Lori. Hey, Lori, how are you?
Hey, I'm good.
What's...
I just want to say, I went to the Tinley Park Home Show yesterday. It's free, going on today as well. I really loved it. I'm a homeowner, and I've got some drainage issues in my backyard, so I bought pictures of the problem, showed it to a couple of the landscapers there. They were very helpful. They're going to get back to me with an estimate.
Fantastic.
But they also had hot tubs on display, a lot of gutter systems, a lot of landscape, you know, like the gentleman that you've got on right now. I saw his stuff. Very cool.
Yeah. You're a consumer, so you're out there in and I don't know if the trend for home shows are coming or going or just kind of at where they're at, but don't you find going there and literally seeing and touching and shaking hands with the people that are doing the install and where you're going to put your investment in is so much nicer than just cold calling and having people, you know, like it's kind of like the first scout. I think the first scout, like in real estate, the first scout's online. Then the second one is I want to meet, you know, the realtor and go to the home. And so do you feel that process is similar for you, Lori?
It was exactly that, because I went and talked to one landscaper who really, I don't know, it just seemed like I didn't think it was going to be a good fit. He wasn't rude, but he really wasn't, you know, noticing that I was there and I was waiting to talk to him. So I went to a different one and the guy was great. And I feel very secure that I'm going to be using him.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for the call, Lori. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Love your show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, too. She brings up a really good point, Lori. Doing a project, whether it's a home renovation, a design, or a backyard deck, you're in a relationship with that homeowner. And you guys handle it really well. What I was impressed when I first met you, David, is the process you guys use from the beginning to the end. Let's step through that for the folks that are new to the show or new to you.
Yeah, we really work hard to understand what people's priorities are, and we do that through a process, through a conversation, talking about, you know, real quick, function. How do they want to use their outdoor space? Aesthetics, what's the look and feel they're going for? Pictures help with that a lot. We always want to look at the space and deal with spatial issues because the house has a certain feel, look, there's issues on the property. And then, of course, budget. We always want to understand what people want to invest, because the most dangerous thing in the world is give a designer, well, maybe not the most dangerous thing in the world, but you don't want to give a designer free rein, because they'll come back with something that's way bigger
right.
than you're expecting.
And then you have like that in your head and you want that, and then you're like, budget doesn't meet that, and that's where the issues start.
That's right. So we go through that conversation in our first meeting, and then from there can put together a couple designs that hopefully people are really excited about.
You know, I got some questions coming in over the text messages. 312-981-7200. Folks, if you want some free design advice for your backyard, this is the season. People are starting to get into it. I know we're doing our cleanup and looking around saying, hey, what can we do this year? The question here is, how do you build a fire pit where the person seated can feel the heat from under, like a portable fire pit that is raised? Does that make sense, that question? Or do you want me to reread
it?
How do you build a fire pit where the person seated can feel the heat from under it, like a portable fire pit that is raised? So, like, you know, I get what she's saying, or he. You see the ones that you can buy in a store where it's kind of like elevated, right. And then the heat kind of pours out from that. So if you put your feet on a cold day, you'll feel the heat. Is there any kind of radiating, you know, heat that you could provide, or maybe underneath the pavers?
So if I'm understanding right, absolutely there is radiant heat you could put under the pavers. We haven't done that, but there is the
So that would
like
be,
that.
In my, yeah. If I was answering that question, that's what I would say. Yeah, is yes, right? We will put radiant heat underneath your neck, or the surround of the fire pit. Because I would imagine when you're doing the brick surrounds, it's more about maintaining that barrier,
right,
correct?
Right, right. Yeah. And so my thought would be, I know when I want to get my feet warm, I prop them up on top of the fire pit, just not get too close.
That's true, too. Let's take a call here from, let's see, Kevin. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling the Frank Fontana Show. What's your question for David?
Hi, I live in Kankakee, and my whole backyard got flooded when the river rose this past week with all the flooding. And it's receded, and it has left the whole backyard full of silt and sand.
Yuck.
And I don't know if it's going to wreck my grass or what's going to happen.
David, how do you fix something like that?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm not a landscaper. If it was me, I'd talk to a landscaper. And is it something that has to be cleaned up first, or is it something that you let time deal with? I got to be honest. I don't know.
Yeah, same here. I don't know. I don't know if I have to get that sand off of there to allow my grass to grow.
I would imagine yes. The answer would be yes to that. Having enough experience with homes, I definitely think the sand's going to basically suffocate the grass. But are you thinking about doing any new work to the yard, or you just want to get rid of that?
I want to get rid of it. I was thinking of, you know, like using an aerator or a dethatcher and like loosen it up, and then maybe it'll blow off, like with a blower.
That might be a good idea. I think David's got a point. Is you got to let it dry out a little bit, and then take that blower to it, and then see what you can, you know, get rid of yourself. But probably a good landscaping company, if you want a recommendation, Old English Garden. You could Google them or just text in. I can get you guys information for a good group that's affordable, does all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
We're in studio with David Berryhill, owner of Archadeck. That's ARCHA Deck of Chicagoland. He's the president and mastermind behind Brilliant Backyards. Big trends for 2018 are in outdoor living spaces, and that means fun and functional spaces and outdoor kitchens. David, are you guys doing a ton of those this year, right?
We do a lot of we actually have rebranded them. We call them Chicagoland kitchens because we scale them a little bit from you know, a lot of people think of very elaborate setups with refrigerators and sinks, and to be honest with you, when you look at it in our market, as you mentioned earlier, you got we like to say 6 months a good time outside. That's a lot of money for that. So we've scaled it a little different, and we'll do some great built-ins for your grill, or even a surround where you slide your grill in and some bars, and cut back on a few of the frills so that it makes it a lot more economical.
Yeah.
But it's a great look and feel, and you get that outdoor space to cook and hang. And
what is your formula for outdoor appliances?
Honestly, in most cases, we have a partner we work with that can sell grills and other appliances.
Sure.
But a lot of our clients come with some product in mind, and we're happy to work with them on that. So in most cases, they're buying their own grill, they're buying that product, and we're coordinating with them to install it.
Got it.
But we do have an expert that if they want, you know, that really high-end infrared grill, we can get that together for them.
Yeah, I've seen them as simple as a grill with, you know, some surface and two pillars next to it, and as big as, you know, everything you can imagine, kegerators and all that stuff. And you guys could do it all.
Yep, absolutely.
When it comes to the installation of that. Absolutely. What surfaces are you seeing as the biggest trend for outdoor countertops?
Yeah, so we do, I keep it simple often. We do a lot of limestone counters. Not, you know, it's, is it perfect? No, because it'll stain sometimes, but they hold up really well over time. I've gone back and looked at them. We, of course, we've done granite. They're beautiful, very high end, gorgeous. Those are the two surfaces we worked with the most. Once in a while, people really, really want to keep it simple, and we'll use paver stones from the actual manufactured products. Those are about as basic as it gets.
Any quartz products you recommend for
I haven't, but I'm sure there's good quality products there that you could look at. From the research I've done, limestone and granite have been really good solutions, so we've kind of focused there.
I had some remnants left of a quartz product from an old job, and I threw it on my, I built a little, you know, barbecue, you know, kitchen area in my yard, and it seems to be holding up okay. I'll That's let you great. Know in a couple of years. Let's stay in touch and see if it holds up. As far as pergolas go, you guys install some pretty amazing pergolas. Are you, is it all, you know, usually when you're getting the call for the barbecue, it, you want that shaded area, correct?
Yeah, we hear that all the time. And sometimes it's a little tricky mixing shade with a grill because putting wood above fire is not the best decision.
True.
So you have to think about that and be cautious. But we hear all the time, you know, I've got a great patio or got a great deck, but I just, it's so hot, it's so sunny, I need a break.
Yeah.
And so pergolas are one option. You know, we always emphasize that it's not heavy shade. It's a light shade that you're gaining. It's more of a grid pattern, but it does give you a break. It definitely creates a space. What's cool about pergolas is they have a very aesthetic look. They really make a space feel like it's its own unit.
They define a zone.
Yeah,
I agree. We have one in our yard as well. I love it. I mean, it doesn't, you know, like on certain days I'm like, oh, I wish it would just cover and block the rain or, you know, the sun, but it doesn't quite do that. But it's so nice aesthetically. It really, you know, gives us that space in our yard, and we don't have a huge yard, but it really, I think it, because it's 12 foot high, you know, we added some serious height to it, so we were barbecuing underneath that, so we were cognizant of that.
It's safe.
But it actually made the yard feel bigger, if that makes sense, just by optical illusion of the height.
Sure, that makes sense. And pergolas will add a lot to the look of your house and just the feel. Again, there's a key place where you want to make sure it matches the aesthetics. We also do a lot of solid roofs. We just designed a project yesterday that we're moving forward with. There's this great little covered space. It's a hip roof, so it's got the four planes, and underneath is
a hip
the guys,
roof. Yeah. Like as in cool or as in like hip?
Yes, it'll be cool too.
Define the hip for those in, for those non-backyard people.
Yeah, four sides coming down versus like a gable style roof.
What material?
On lingo. It's all cedar, so it's going to be real aesthetically pleasing. Tied into their patio.
So I was thinking corrugated metal. I've seen a lot of that. And Are you using a lot
we
of?
We haven't done much with metal on the roofs. It's usually either shingles to match the house to blend it in, or cedar shake a lot to get that kind of rustic look. A more contemporary venue, the metal would make a lot of sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, when you mention cedar shake, a lot of people start to shake. Not because the maintenance that you hear about. What is the protocol for, like, how many years should it last? Should I be, you know, resealing it every couple of years? I mean, you work with it a lot. What's your suggestion?
There's kind of two issues to consider. One is the aesthetics. If you really want to keep that fresh look of a certain color, you're going to have to take care of it much more often. I would probably guess, you know, every, you know, under 10 years, if not under 8 years, you're going to want to restain it to keep that look. If it's about durability, I think they're very durable roofs. They just, over time, you know, maybe every 15, 20 years, you got to redo them. And the good news is we refer people out to staining companies and experts who help with all that.
Yeah.
But it is a great product, but you do have to maintain it, you know?
I get that call all the time from clients like, do you do shakaroos? I'm like, no, it's just a very specialty thing. But this is really good stuff. And as far as outdoor rooms, you know, just a room to hang in, are you seeing that popping up a lot?
Yeah, a big part of our business is screen porches, open porches. My favorite is actually an open porch. It's what I have at my house. You can get a little more decorative with the columns and trim it out a little bit
more. So is that called an extension of the home, or is it, you know, is it an addition, or is it just like from a technical standpoint, am I having to add on to my home with a job like that, or is that literally just like a porch attached to the home with a screened in area?
We consider it and look at it as a porch being added on. You can do a full addition. That's a little different where you're, you know, worried about insulated space and HVAC and everything else. We're really creating, you know, in many cases, a deck that has a roof is very commonly what it is. But it goes further than that. We have different types of window options that are very basic windows, but they give you that break from the wind to extend the season. We do more and more with putting fireplaces in screen porches and open porches,
that's
which
cool.
is a great multi-season ad. So it's really fun, actually. We do a lot of rooms, but they're screen porches, they're open porches. Once in a while, a sunroom where people really want that, you know, three-season use.
Sure.
But we draw the line at a full addition.
Good stuff. David Berryhill, Architect of Chicagoland. What's the website?
Architectofchicagoland.com.
Do you have a phone number you want to give out for people?
Yeah, 847-496-4333.
And you can catch him at the home show where?
Tinley Park.
There you go. He'll be there this weekend only?
Yes.
All right, folks. All right, thanks, David. Appreciate it. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk beauty in a different way. Dr. Stephen Sherba is here, and he's going to be making me beautiful and younger with needles and Botox. It's going to be interesting. First ever live Botox injection on WTN Radio. I'm taking a deep breath. We'll be right back.